You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Echand Deravi. Echand is a lifelong pilgrim from Scotland who passed through 75 countries before settling in Japan. There, he established himself as an author and public speaker on metaphysics, spirituality, and remote viewing. He is a vital link between Japanese culture and the West, acting as interpreter for figures such as Graham Hancock, and leader of many journeys with Japanese to sacred sites around the planet. He currently has over a dozen books in print in Japanese and a series of DVD talks recorded over the last 6 years, all also in Japanese. His key concern is conscious evolution. He is the director and guide for an outstanding spiritual video, which we'll be talking about tonight, and it's called Earth's Pilgrims. And you can find out more about Earth's Pilgrims on the name, www.earthpilgrims.com. And you can also find Echand at www.echand.jp. So let's welcome him to the show now. Hi, Echand, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Lance, am I coming through loud and clear?
Yes, you're perfect for me, thank you. Before we start, I just wanted to tell the listeners that I downloaded your video to watch today so that I would know what I'm talking about. Yeah. I was so intrigued by the preview, the trailer on the video site that I watched it, and it is an absolutely magnificent spiritual journey, and I give it high praise. Everybody should be watching this video, buying it, and showing it to their friends because it is so uplifting and so inspiring. I just wanted to share that with you before we get started.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that, Lance, because actually until now the Japanese version has been my focus, and the film is largely unknown in the West. So I feel very privileged to have this opportunity to talk with you tonight so that perhaps we can have a more wider audience, let's say, have a look at it.
Absolutely. You know, I have been talking to people from that have various cultural backgrounds from North and South Korea and Vietnam and the Asian countries. And we have so many wonderful brothers and sisters around the world, and you just can't help but love the human spirit no matter what form it takes. And I just have high praise for anybody who's acting as a bridge between our various cultures because, you know, I feel like at the root of everything, we're just basically all love. So you're doing some incredible work to bring us together, so thank you.
Well, I feel that it's beginning, actually, from now, with the help of this film, Lance. Most of my time has been spent in Japan bringing information from the West to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But I now feel that it's time for me to share what I have learned and understood from 36 years, pretty much 70% of my life in that culture. There is a lot to share, and Japan really is still an unknown quantity, so it all really starts again now.
Yes, yes. And interestingly enough, there really is no sense that there's any one particular country that you focus on. Maybe you can share a little bit about what the movie is about. And in the beginning of the movie, there's some beautiful poetry by Rumi, one of my favorite Sufi poets and conscious beings. And there also is a marvelous lady who is called the Peace Pilgrim, and she's just so inspirational. Can you tell us a little bit about what inspired your film?
The theme of my work in Japan as a writer, public speaker, and I suppose I'm a bit of a rabble-rouser in Japan, because I have a strong conviction that we are heading into very troubled times on planet Earth.
Yes.
I think many of us are aware of that, and I've looked at some of your other guests, many of whom I'm familiar with, and if there was a common theme to all of what we seem to be discussing, it is surely that we have to evolve very quickly to get through this next stage of our journey on Earth. And the key word is journey. I believe that if there was an attitude that we could embrace that would really help us to get through what's coming and what's happening now, it would be the consciousness, the spirit of a pilgrim. Not necessarily a pilgrim from a specific religious tradition. What I try to do in this film is to enlarge the meaning of the word pilgrim to point us in the direction of all being spiritual pilgrims on an evolutionary journey. So that's really what the movie is about in a nutshell.
Yes, yes. And in fact, there's one of the people who's on the video. You have some wonderful people who speak in the video. It's really a spiritual cast of beautiful souls and heavyweights on the cutting edge. But one of the people is Nassim Haramein, who's a Swiss-born physicist. And there's a section there where he explains about the solar system is a form of a spiral pilgrimage. And there's a video at the same time which shows us visually how the solar system is spiraling and how Earth is actually on its own pilgrimage. And it's just such a beautiful image, and I'd never, ever had that thought before.
Well, that is incredibly perceptive, Lance. I'll tell you how that happened. I am now sitting in Nelson, British Columbia, one of the most beautiful locations on the planet that I've traveled all around. And it was 2 years ago here in Nelson, as I was in the initial stages of making the film, I was with my editor who created that footage that you just mentioned of how the solar system is spiraling through the galaxy. His name is Luke Hancock. He's actually Graham Hancock's son.
Ah.
He came up, he was upstairs in the room that I'm in now, editing the first section, and he said, "You might like this guy." And he handed me 4 DVDs, and it was about 10 hours of Nassim Haramein's lecture.
Wow.
So I spent that evening watching this extraordinary, gifted physicist give a talk about sacred geometry, about the construction of the physical universe, how it's put together from his physicist point of view. And during his presentation, he had an explanation and a very similar sequence showing how the Earth is actually on a journey, the solar system is on a journey, spiraling through the solar system. And at that moment, I said to myself, I want this guy in the film. I'm going to get him in this film.
Yeah,
and because I needed a scientist. I had other thinkers. I had environmentalists. I had Peace Pilgrim. But I didn't have a physicist. I didn't have a scientist. And all of my work has involved bringing information about consciousness and evolution to people's attention. And, of course, it's important to have people with a good scientific background for the doubting Thomases of the world, let's say.
Yeah.
And so I said to Luke Hancock, who at that time was only 22, 23 years old, very gifted young man.
Wow.
I said, do you think you could get me in touch with this man? And 15 minutes later, somehow he got a phone number. And picked up the phone here in Nelson, B.C. I got the time all wrong. And I phoned up Nassim Haramein at 5 o'clock in the morning in Hawaii.
Huh.
And he said to me when I finally met him, I never pick up the phone.
Especially
at 5 o'clock in the morning from somebody I've never heard of. And he said something that morning just told me to pick it up.
Wow.
And that was it. I got on the phone with him and I said to him very straight, I said, hey, I just watched your DVD, and correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not a scientist, but, you know, I've done a lot of research. Correct me if I'm wrong, but have you solved Einstein's conundrum about the unified field? Because that's what I think you've done. And he very humbly said, well, could be. And I said, would you be in my film, please? I'll come to Hawaii. And that was it.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
That was it. That's how the film was made, Lance. I knew nothing about making films. I started with a tiny camera and went on a pilgrimage. I literally went on a pilgrimage and thought it will evolve as a pilgrim movie only if I myself am on a pilgrimage. Otherwise,
wow.
It won't be the reality of a pilgrimage. And I met the people on the way. Somehow we got the budget together. People like Nassim just said yes.
Wow.
Coleman Barks, who never answers emails. He's even got it on his website. I will not respond to emails.
Wow.
And I called him right away.
That's amazing. And just so that we have a better, so the audience knows a little bit more, I mean, you know, I've got a great listening audience, and we're wonderfully awake and aware. But, you know, I didn't really look at the pilgrimage quite the same way before I saw the film and after. So maybe you could share a little bit about what the essence of being a pilgrim is.
Okay. Traditionally, the term pilgrim would normally refer to a man or a woman who, from within their own spiritual or religious tradition, consciously goes on a journey to visit sacred places, whether they be temples or shrines or mosques or actual physical locations in nature, holy mountains, holy places, with the intention, by going through a rather arduous journey, with the intention of reflecting on their lives, meditating on themselves, living a life of almost complete insecurity, and placing their complete faith and trust in a higher order, whether that be Buddha or Christ or Muhammad or shamanic ancestors. A pilgrim is, as the great peace pilgrim said in our film, a pilgrim is a wanderer with a purpose, not just idly wandering around for adventure or thrills,
mm-hmm.
but having a specific purpose. And I would define that purpose as purification, self-purification.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And it feels as if we're in that process right now. And it's so interesting that many New Age and spiritual leaders talk about the earth evolving and ascending or moving into her own higher form of consciousness, and that this is a very remarkable period that we're in. And it's so difficult to remember this because it feels like or looks like it's all dark and getting darker. But from your film, many of your guests on the video, like Satish Kumar, so eloquently speaks about this being a wonderful turning point.
Yes. Satish Kumar, for our listeners' recollection, let's say, because I'm sure many are familiar with him, was chosen because he really is a walk-your-talk pilgrim. Satish Kumar was born in India, and at a very early age, at the age of 8, he consciously decided to become a Jain monk. Now, the Jain tradition will be familiar to some of our listeners, probably from the image of very pure-minded people who have such respect for the idea of nonviolence to everything that they sometimes wear masks on their face to prevent them from killing insects. That's how far they take it.
Wow.
Mahavir, who was their original inspiration, lived around the time of the Buddha. So Jainism is within the Hindu tradition, or within the Indian tradition, very close to the Buddhist tradition, but they really take the idea of nonviolence very, very seriously. So here's a boy, imagine Lance, 8 years old, says to his mother, "Mom, I'm going to become a Jain monk, and that's how I'm going to live, and that's how I'm going to die."
Wow.
Now, this is a serious thing to say when you're 8 years old. And we actually had a long dialogue, which ended up as a book in Japan and in English, called Earth Pilgrim, in which he shows how his mother was his first great spiritual teacher, because she said to him, imagine yourself being the mother, Lance. She said, "Oh, wonderful, my son. I'm so happy for you. Please leave me now."
Wow. Wow.
He left her and became a wandering mendicant monk, moving from village to village. His life was reading the scriptures, meditating, and receiving alms from people until the age of 18. Now, at that time, he met one of the great master Gandhi's disciples. And this disciple, who was working in Gandhi's ashrams, this would be probably in the 60s, early 60s maybe? No, 50s. He said, "You monks are a waste of time. You sit around meditating all day and you think you're so spiritual and evolved. We're out there with society helping the poor people. We're walking our talk and you're just meditating. You're not doing anything." And Satish got such a shock that he was forced to consider his position. And being a very intelligent and awake young person, he made the incredible decision, the very hard decision, to throw away his life as a monk and become a Gandhian ashram participant and an activist, which led to a pilgrimage with no money that he walked from India all the way to London. Imagine that.
Wow. I can't even walk to the mailbox. You know, these are truly miraculous and inspirational people that we just don't hear enough about. We're so bombarded with the news and the false dualistic old paradigm stuff that's passing away, and that's just clinging to a dying world. And these wonderful people and yourself on your film all seem to agree with that. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, I wanted to have people in this film who actually understood the ramifications of what a pilgrim means, but not just from a single religious tradition, because I wanted to expand on the meaning of pilgrim. That's why Nassim was specifically chosen to show us how the solar system is actually on a pilgrimage. I mean, how many people listening right now understand the absolute scientific fact that we are now hurtling forward at over 1,000,000 kilometers an hour through space?
Yeah.
We're not just going round the sun. The entire solar system is moving forward at approximately 1,000,000 kilometers an hour on a massive arc through the galaxy.
Yeah.
And so we are transiting areas of the galaxy that we haven't transited as Homo sapiens before. We're going into uncharted territory. We're like on a ship that on a voyage going into uncharted territory, and we're all sitting here thinking we've got it all figured out, and they were nicely spinning around in circles around the sun in a fixed position, which is complete nonsense. We're still told fools, right?
Yes. That's just so wonderful because, like I said, when I saw Nassim's explanation in that video, I really got it, that everything is just hurtling at an enormous rate into the unknown. And, of course, we're afraid of the unknown, but we are in uncharted territory. And according to various cosmologies, Mayan and others, sometime around 2012, we're going to actually be in the middle of the galactic plane, which is a huge spaceship-like affair, and we'll be passing into the other side of it. So we don't even know what we're going to be seeing or experiencing at that time. And now,
we have no idea. And that's why there are many, many, many theories about 2012, and I have actually expounded on a lot of them in Japanese, because 2012 is a metaphor in my mind. Mm-hmm. It is a trigger that should be getting our attention, just as you said, seeing that one image that we created, that Luke Hancock created. The whole purpose of Nassim being there was to show everybody that one image. If you can get that one image, hey, you're moving a million miles an hour, buddy, and you don't know where you're going next. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. NASA doesn't know. The Pope doesn't know. Nobody knows here. And so when nobody knows what the uncharted territory ahead means, who is the kind of spiritual person who is going to be in the strongest position to navigate such a journey is the pilgrim.
Absolutely.
Because the pilgrim has always done that. Uncharted territory is their life, the moment, each step. So if we can all embody that feeling without getting hooked up on anybody's specific theory, just the idea that we're all spiritual pilgrims on a pilgrim planet in a pilgrim solar system, and if we want to fractally expand that, we're in a pilgrim galaxy too, which is also transiting the larger universe. So if this is not a pilgrimage, what is?
Well, some people have referred to this as Spaceship Earth, and isn't it unusual that America was founded by the pilgrims?
Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, as above, so below.
That's right.
You know, I have to mention too that Graham Hancock was wonderful to see in the film. He's going to be on the show in a couple of months, so I have to say something about him. And he's come out with an amazing book that I'll be reading for that show called Entangled, and it looks like an amazing thriller. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Sublime synchronicity. I just contacted Graham a couple of hours ago. He's right near me in Canada right now.
Oh,
he's giving a talk in a small town in British Columbia right now called Salmon Arm, which is about 5 hours drive from here. And after that, he's going to commence his American roadshow to publicize the book that you've just talked about, Entangled.
Oh,
and
yes.
Entangled is his first novel.
Wow.
And we've both got a very interesting conspiracy of similar themes going on with us.
Uh-huh.
If I may share with you all how we met, it might help to understand why he's in the film.
Oh, yes, please do.
Well, in 1995, I was at Chichen Itza in the Yucatan Peninsula, which many people will be familiar with as the Toltec Pyramid, where on the equinoxes, a very unusual combination of light and shadow from the sun as its rays strike the pyramid's steps, a series of isosceles triangles make it look like a snake is descending from the top of the pyramid to the ground. And this is called the Kukulkan, the cosmic serpent. Wisdom, energy, universal power all come from heaven to earth. On that day, I was sitting with about 20,000 people right at the front, and I was doing a simple ceremony with a group of Japanese people to honor, to celebrate this incredible time. And years later, I pick up a book called Heaven's Mirror, which Graham and his wife Santa put together, a wonderful look at the as-above, so-below correlations all through our Earth's cultures. And lo and behold, there is me and my wife with a group of Japanese in the picture and the pyramid behind.
Oh.
So you don't have to be a brain surgeon to figure out that Graham and Santa were standing right behind us. And at that point in 1995, he had just come out with Fingerprints of the Gods, which was the book that brought ancient archaeology, in my mind, what is called ancient archaeology. There are other terms that we could use that are much more, for his work, I think, appropriate. A reinterpretation of ancient archaeology, let's say.
Right.
I had read that book, and I thought, this man has created a new genre. And I immediately wanted to get that book translated into Japanese. Cut a long story short, he was coming to Japan in 2005 to be on a very big television show that I was on, during which the pyramids and the underwater ruins of Yonaguni in Okinawa would be discussed. And so I got in touch with him, and I said, Graham, Japanese television will probably trash everything you have to say. And they did. They made light of his incredible research, in my mind. They tried to poo-pie it. And they had their local archaeologists, specialists on the show who were saying, nah, 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 nah. We didn't have really ancient civilizations like that. So that began a friendship. And I decided that we would have to have his work more properly introduced to the Japanese. I organized a lecture series for him in Japan. And as a result, we wrote a book together. We made a DVD together. We became good friends. And his son ended up being the editor of Earth Pilgrims. So now he's just down the road, and I'll be seeing him on Monday.
Oh, my goodness. Well, be sure and say hello to him and remind him that he's going to do my show, too.
I will indeed.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll tell him that you've said that about Entangled, which
yes,
I have, of course, read. And it is a wonderful, multidimensional story that takes the core ideas of shamanism, altered states of consciousness, and time entanglement, what physicists would now call quantum entanglement. It takes all that into a really thrilling story, an amazing drama about evil in our world, and the battle against evil that we're all faced with.
Mm-hmm.
And you said yourself earlier, Lance, seems so dark now, seems that there's so little hope. It really does seem that we have some kind of an evil amoeba
on this
planet.
Yes.
And, you know, somebody once famously said, when you start saying that evil doesn't exist and that there's no such thing as evil, that's when you start... You've got to start in a bit more seriously.
Yes, absolutely. I used to think that way, but not anymore.
No. We have serious problems on Spaceship Earth.
Absolutely. Very serious, and they're much larger than any of us can imagine, probably.
They're spiritual in nature, and that's what we refuse dogmatically to face, because we have been slammed into a materialistic trance.
Yeah.
Over the last 150 years, to the extent that I think we are on a very, very precarious balance here, truly believing that we are material beings only, and that science has the answer to the so-called non-material aspect, which is ludicrous. Both Graham and I have constantly said, where is the definition for consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the definition for consciousness in science? It doesn't exist, because science cannot define consciousness.
Oh, absolutely.
And never will be able to define consciousness in scientific terms.
Right.
And consciousness is described as an epiphenomenon, something that happens because you got a brain. And yet, you know, the same scientists have got thousands of experiments showing that people with dead brains are totally conscious.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
So what does that tell you?
Well, I've often thought that there are a lot of zombies walking around on the planet today. the thing is that quantum physicists, and that's even a primitive science now, has shown that everything is entangled, and you can't separate one thing from another. That they're even the quarks jump from our bodies and disappear someplace and come back. They could be creating numerous parallel worlds and alternate universes, and these could all be simultaneously going on without our knowledge because of the various speeds of the different realms that we're unaware of.
Well, that's where I think it behooves everybody to take a look at Nassim's work.
Yeah.
He is certainly not your typical Ivy League graduated physicist, and that's why we need to pay attention, because all great leaps in physics and in science have always been done by heretical thinkers. Not the people who come out of the straight ironclad universities where they teach the same dogmatic stuff on and on and on. It's just as bad as, if not worse, than religion.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, I look at Discovery and I look at some of their incredible fantasies with computer generation that makes people actually think that that's how it is. But
yes.
It's not. It is a theory in the brain of a scientist. Now, you said, as above, so below. The roots of science are in alchemy, and I know that you've had Jay Widener on there, and he's a very knowledgeable person to talk about that, much more knowledgeable than me. But in short, science was born out of alchemy, and the basis of it all is as above, so below, which is very simply what? It's fractality.
Yes.
And if you don't understand what a fractal is, then you have no business talking about science. Because everything in the entire universe is either completely interconnected from the tiniest electron to the largest star cluster, or we're living in a discombobulated nightmare of impossibility.
Yes.
Everything is either connected or it's not.
Yes.
And no science at this particular juncture that I've had a look at, and the word science I once read comes from an old Italian or Latin word, scire, which means to cut up and divide.
Yes, fragment, yes.
Fragment. And so how can you understand the fractal interconnected nature of all that is if you're cutting everything up and gazing at it for 500 years and creating theories about it that you may or may not prove one day? It's absurd. And we've venerated these people way too long. But, you know, if I look at all of my videos on YouTube, it's the interview with Nassim. It's got 50,000 hits now.
Wow.
Now, that tells me people are beginning to realize this guy talks horse sense. A school kid can understand it. He talks about what is a dimension, how are all things connected on a beautiful scale. It's called fractal scalability. Everything is connected. And once you get that, you understand sacred geometry. And once you understand sacred geometry, you understand what kind of a matrix we're embedded in right now. And it's not going to take you 18 years studying for a PhD. We don't have time for that.
Absolutely. I'm just so in agreement with everything you said and with Hassim's work as well. If there is a possibility that we can be fragmented into greater duality, it would appear that there are forces at work that would create a kind of net or matrix that encourages or densifies our attachment to materialism, which separates us from each other, from nature, and from, you know, the spiritual elements.
Well, it certainly would appear to be the case, wouldn't it, Lance?
I would say yes. Yeah, and there's a lot of talk today about meme engineering. I didn't even know what a meme was until a few months ago.
Yes.
And then the film Inception came out, which completely goes into this idea of, you know, embedding thoughts deeper and deeper into the subconscious and the sleepers that are dreaming the dream within the dream within the dream. And so all of this information is coming together, but I continue to wonder, do we have any time left, or are we actually running out of time, as the indigenous wisdom keepers tell us, and that is a good thing?
Well, we have to go back to fractals again. The first person, I believe, who intelligently talked about the fractal nature of time, and somebody I had the great privilege to work with before he died, was Terence McKenna.
Wow.
We spent some time with Japanese on the island of Kauai doing a retreat on shamanism. But, of course, he got a huge inspiration based on the I Ching while he was in South America in a profoundly altered state through having used local power plants. He was downloaded with basically the whole idea of fractal time compression, which became his computer software called Time Wave Zero. And as many people will know, that fractal time program completely comes to a head, to a peak, to a point in 2012, and it had no connection with indigenous stories from the Maya. So the idea of fractal time is very simple. It's the same as fractal theory itself. It is that a wave of time and energy repeats itself again and again and again at ever shorter intervals and more powerful informational load. So if you imagine a spiral, just imagine a spiral. You've got the outside ring of a spiral is very, very long as it goes round in a circle, and then that spiral tightens into a second circle and repeats exactly the same movement, but much faster.
Mm-hmm.
And as it moves, it collects more and more information and moves into the next circle, and the next, and the next, and the next. And if you keep on drawing a spiral in two dimensions, you'll get to what? The center of the circle. If you want to do it in three dimensions, you'll eventually get to the top of a spherical shape, which we denote as 2012. Now, if this is true, Lance, and I ask people all over the world, I ask large audiences in Japan, I asked them in 1995, imagine an audience, you're asking, how many people think that time is speeding up? And, you know, about 10 people have put their hands up out of 150.
Mm-hmm.
4 years ago in Tokyo, I gave a lecture to 1,000 people. And I said, how many people here feel that a day now is considerably shorter than it was, let's say, 2 years ago? Okay? You know and I know what a day felt like two years ago. You haven't forgotten, right?
Yeah.
You know what a day felt like. You get up, you brush your teeth, you have your coffee, you go through the motions, you read your newspaper, you do whatever, you get in your car, you go to work, whatever. And then finally you go to bed. That's a day in energy. How does it feel as a flow? Of course, some days are faster and slower than others, depending on how excited you are, how bored you are. But generally speaking, okay?
Yeah.
And I said to them, how many of you really, honestly, don't just put your hand up because everybody else is. How many of you really think that time is speeding up? Every hand. It was like that scene of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah,
when they're in
India.
And all the Indians point upwards. Every hand in the audience went up. And I said, there you have it. Has anybody talked about this to you? Has any newspaper proclaimed this? Have you seen it on BBC or CNN that the most precious resource a human being has, which is time, is running out at ever faster intervals on a daily basis? Everybody feels it. Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And we're all in denial.
Oh, yeah.
And you're telling me that nothing's going to happen in 2012. Whoa. With the Mayans, mate.
Yes.
You've got to do you. So that's how I approach it. We are in fractal time compression, and you just said we're running out of time. But the amount of information that's coming into our matrix right now is also exponentially increasing, so that in the next 2 years, we could literally, potentially go through thousands, tens of thousands of years of quantum shifts in our understanding.
Yes.
And that it is indeed possible that at the 11th hour, enough of that quantum shifting will take place within the consciousness of humanity to allow us to deal with some massive, I believe, traumatic birth event. And
yes.
It's an adventure, it's a thrill, it's the ride of a species lifetime.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's get ready!
And, you know, it's so funny you mentioned Terrence McKenna, because I'm a huge fan of Terrence. And for those who don't know him, and I don't think there's anybody that's into consciousness research who hasn't thoroughly enjoyed Terrence McKenna's work, just do a Google on Time Wave Zero, because it's a magnificent piece of work. And as he said, it's the one idea that he plucked from, you know, the field of genius from which we can all pluck ideas and will be plucking ideas. And he shows graph-wise how the I Ching maps out and maps it over history, and it's a fascinating study. So I'm so glad that you mentioned Terrence's work.
Well, we can't forget Terrence. I mean, he was an absolute brilliant pioneer, and in later days, you know, we'll look back and we'll go, who were the people that really prepared us for 2012? If
yes.
2012 is what we think it is. Who were the groundbreakers? Who are the guys that really got us to pay attention? And we're going to have to say, whoa, Terrence was right there, and he had wonderful metaphors like there's a massive attractor at the end of time,
yes.
And it's like a huge magnet that's sucking everything towards it. And if you go into Nassim's work, you'll understand what is a black hole
yes.
in reality.
Yes.
How that black hole might be connected
yes.
to the idea of an attractor at the end of time.
Yes.
So we have new genius coming on the block
that's
coming from not just science. I mean, I talked to Nassim personally, and he's had some experiences that will totally blow people out of the water, and he said he's going to write a story about that, so I won't say any more.
Okay.
But he's not from around here, if you get my drift.
I got you. One of my favorite guests is Barbara Hand Clow.
She's not from around here either.
She wrote a book on the alchemy of nine dimensions, and in that book, she talks about the possibility that we will be going into a black hole and what that might feel like. And the interesting thing about this is that I've actually had that experience of dissolving into a black hole feet first. So I don't understand why I had it or where I came from or where I ended up. But it wasn't an awful experience. It was actually it was trippy, and I wasn't high on drugs, and it was just you kind of melt or merge in a wave, and you kind of feel this wave coming, and then your feet and your head stretch out into infinity, and then your body turns into a pane of glass, and you just go unconscious momentarily, and when you come to, you're in another universe.
Well, that's actually an experience many people, I believe, have the potential to be experiencing more. Nassim talks about the black hole as W-H-O-L-E, by the way, which
oh,
I thought
yes. yeah.
was very linguistically sleight of hand, kind of brilliant of him. We have to get a better understanding of what this concept of a black hole really means, not the astronomical idea. It goes far beyond that. And I have to say to our listeners that until about, I think it was about last year or 2 years ago, Nassim was considered very fringe. But then he teamed up with a very esteemed NASA scientist, a lady whose name unfortunately escapes me right now, but she was actually heavily involved with the initial remote viewing groups in the U.S., and I myself was one of the first people to learn remote viewing after it was declassified. She's
Ooh.
A great physicist. So he got together with her and put together an academic paper, which was then released to the academic community and got an award, Lance, in Belgium as the best new academic paper of the year. And it was about what we have been discussing in our layman's terms. But, you know, if we'd look at that paper, we wouldn't understand the we wouldn't understand what it was about. But the fact that he got such recognition at this point in time, though he's not from any Ivy League university, tells me that people like you and myself and our listeners are ready to be told the real goods in no uncertain terms by people who have hearts and souls that understand what's going on.
Yes.
And not in this coarse language of hard, rigid materialism.
Yes.
And we're ready.
Yes, we are ready. We are so ready. And, you know, one of I found an amazing video. I can't remember who it is, but it's one of the Indian teachers, and he talks about the Earth loosening up its hold of the gravitational pull consciously, just a small amount, and that the 2012 phenomenon will quite possibly go into two different directions, depending on how rigidly we are affixed to our left brain mind activity and attached to that, and or how loosely we hold life and are able to have less thoughts with more action. And so there are two possibilities. There are probably millions of possibilities. But I thought that was an interesting idea, that thoughts have mass, and that if the gravitational pull of the Earth is loosening, then the subtle bodies are going to be experiencing huge changes.
Well, we see this from our astronauts. You know, there's been this bone of contention with conspiracy theorists that we never actually went to the moon. And you want to say, well, what happened to people like Edgar Mitchell out there beyond the Van Allen belt?
Mm-hmm.
They had a very, very profound experience, a change of consciousness, which I believe can happen when you are outside the Van Allen belts. I mean, literally, you're outside the electromagnetic zone of the Earth, which contains all the thoughts and the angst and the aggro and the emotion of all humanity. Imagine getting beyond that. It's like, pop!
Wow.
You're out a new vacuum, a wonderful void. And so when people say they never went, I say, no. There may have been a number two strategy to cover in case they failed, and there may have been a set that in Kubrick's stage in London for them to film. Yeah, okay, but
Jay Weiner likes, yes, exactly.
I mean, come on, don't do that. That's too much. People like Ed Mitchell came back and they said, you know, basically I woke up. And so what you've just said about the gravitational effect, I would say it's more the electromagnetic effect. On the brain nervous system working itself, which totally connects to our thoughts, we can pop out of that en masse as shamans and spiritual people for millennia have managed to escape from it through other means.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't all get it this time.
Yes,
we could
have
a species meltdown, and that's the problem.
Yes. And it would appear that we're all headed for this event horizon, and the indigenous wisdom keepers like the Kogi, for instance, and
the Kogi, yes,
aren't they amazing? And the New Zealand Maori, and I mean the Mayans and the wisdom keepers in Peru and the Andes that you highlight in your film, which maybe you can talk
about. These people, my goodness. Well,
yes, please. Go ahead.
That's why Wade Davis was chosen. Now, for those of us who may not know his name, Wade Davis is a Harvard graduated anthropologist of very high repute who was sent by his great teacher, Professor Schultes. He was sent to Peru specifically to discover heretofore undiscovered herbs and plants that are in the rainforest. And that was the beginning of his incredible ethnic pilgrimage, whereby he began to live, to study, to share a ceremony with just about every group of Aboriginal people on this planet. And the result was that he literally became an Indy Jones of anthropology, a very erudite speaker, a great writer, And the reason I chose him for this film was because I wanted him to show us just how much we are losing in terms of our ethnic knowledge base. In other words, the shamanic ethnological knowledge base of the planet Earth is being trashed right now.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what's happening in South America. The Peruvians are losing their traditions,
yes.
even losing the language of speaking Spanish. And we could do a quiz with your listeners. How many languages were there on Earth 100 years ago? The answer is 6,000.
Wow.
According to Davis. 6,000
wow.
different languages, 6,000 different ways of speaking about reality and expressing your mythology and your incredible background of ethnic wisdom is now 50% less. We have chopped half of the world's languages in the last 100 years, which means
okay.
that somebody somewhere on Earth right now is about to croak and will be the last person in that tribe who speaks that last word.
Wow.
And we think we have problems with the environment?
Yeah.
So he calls that ethnocide, the conscious
yes.
killing of ethnic minorities. It's not an accident.
Yes, no.
They are being driven into extinction by who? By large corporations, by governments, and by very greedy individuals who want their resources under the ground. So
yes.
that's
yes.
why it is in there.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, you're going to have to come back and talk some more about these things because I am so thrilled about this information that you're sharing with us that we could spend at least a couple of hours going into any one of these ideas.
You're going to have to build another fire there.
Yes. Well,
chat.
And, you know, our culture, the whole culture that we're in here in America and globally, and this is an intentional thing, has demonized drugs intentionally to make them inaccessible and evil, just as the church has demonized sex and various other natural functions. And the symbology has been reversed to sacred geometrical shapes. So everything is backwards, upside down, and wrong. And,
yeah.
You know, these the indigenous tribes are still using ayahuasca and coca leaves. And, you know, I was fortunate as a teenager to stumble across LSD and have my mystical experiences. So thank goodness for that. I was able to find out that there are other realms.
Well, actually, in the film Earth Pilgrims, the largest section of the film is in Peru. It's filmed at 16,000 feet, the incredible festival of Coyuriti, the snow star festival of the Quechua people. And to prepare for that very severe pilgrimage, my team and I spent time with a Canadian shaman who is also in our film, a wonderful man, who prepared the sacred brew, Washuma, which is the South American version of the North American cactus, peyote.
Ah, wonderful.
It's also called San Pedro. It is very different from ayahuasca. It is a tremendously powerful plant mixture that makes you more aware than you have ever been in your life, not
oh,
of other dimensions, not of celestial realms, not of parallel realities, but of this living earth. What are the mountains? What is the wind? What is the rain? How are we all connected? And this plant, if you were to give it to somebody who said, I really want to know about deep ecology, I want to understand the meaning of the environment, we'll say, well, forget about going to school and reading books and listening to anybody like Al Gore, for God's sake. Go
right.
into the mountains of Peru, drink this Washuma once in your life, and I guarantee you'll come out of that with your head on the ground saying, thank you, Mother Earth.
Wow.
Thank you. That's what it does to you. And because we had drunk that, we were totally connected to the Peruvian environment, and we were able to go figure, you know, five, six white men, I think we were. We are with 60,000 native people doing a ceremony that's been going on forever, and they totally accepted us with movie cameras and microphones.
Wow.
I mean, anywhere else they would have said, go home.
Yes.
So it showed us that the art of pilgrimage, the preparation for a pilgrimage, the deliberate shifting of your consciousness to be in tune with that environment through using the sacred plants in sacred ceremony, they instantly understood from our vibration that we had done that.
Wow.
And we were brothers. And so that's why that very unusual footage, and we don't know how long this will go on because the glacier is melting. That could be one of the last times you can get a film crew up to see that at Koyuriti. And so I encourage people to look at that section, which is for free on the internet. You can see the section on Peru and I think part one of the film for free. And if you like it, then and you want to know more, actually, Ehan Deravi is my nom de plume. I'm also John Craig, who is the Japanthropologist. That's Japan plus anthropologist. Japanthropologist.com is where I have a new website detailing my English activity, because now I get to speak my own language.
Wow. Wow. I'm just awed by you, Ekon. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. And I just want to thank you so much for just this awesome opportunity to talk to you and to connect and to share this information with the listeners and with the world. And this show will be archived indefinitely, so this will have a ripple into the future and the past, which is one. And I would just love it if you would come back.
Well, we look forward to that, and I thank you and all the listeners for giving me this tremendous privilege to talk about a film that it was an incredible thing to make, but it's a very different thing to actually get it out to people, and that's what I need to do now, and it's people like you who can help me most, and so I really am thankful for this opportunity and look forward to another one.
Wonderful, Ekon. Well, thank you again, and many blessings, and we'll have another talk. We'll have another fireside chat, and please take our love from us, from me, all the listeners, to our Japanese family and share that with them and let them know that
I'll get your information out on my Japanese blog so that they can listen in English over there.
Wonderful. I'll send you a link.
Okay. Look forward, mate. All the best.
Yes. Thank you so much. Good night.
Good night.